This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more five-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's Porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain.
As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today. So let's try this. I say SEO, you say...
I don't know.
Come on. I say SEO, you say...
Strategy. I don't know.
Sure, I'll take it. So today we're going to talk about one of the leading companies in the search engine optimization marketing space, SEMrush.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's similar to Ahrefs and Moz for anyone familiar with SEO optimization tools.
And these tools have become massive data and research engines and have evolved significantly since their introduction a little over like 10 years ago.
All right, well, let's get into it.
Welcome to Rocketship.fm.
Rocketship FM is produced in partnership with Product Collective.
We are your hosts, Michael Sacca.
And I'm Mike Belsito.
So SEMrush started out as a small group of SEO and IT specialists, united by a single mission to make online competition fair and transparent. We spoke with Fernando Angulo, their head of communications, about those early days.
SEMrush was founded 11 years ago. Actually, it's going to be 12 years ago this year in August. We have two founders. The main founder is Oleg Shogolev and Dmitry. Both were starting this company since the beginning, Dmitry Melnikov.
Oleg was introduced to SEO when he was attending college studying information security.
SEO was pretty simple back then, and Dmitry and Oleg quickly learned the basic mechanics of it.
Both of them are engineers. They were studying in the Polytechnical University from St. Petersburg in Russia. Both of them, they love mathematics a lot. And they were creating different projects actually one of them. It came really popular, really fast. The name of that project was, still is, SEO Quake.
SEO Quake is a toolbar that lets you check any web page for a bunch of SEO parameters. And it was a huge success in terms of adoption, as it's been downloaded by over 15 million people.
After a couple of years, I will say, they created another services which allows people to understand how people are searching, the volume of those search queries, how difficult it is to rank for keywords. So they were creating basically SEMrush and the keyword research tool that we have since the beginning. It was our main feature. Then the domain research tool, when people just needed to enter your domain, and you will receive different metrics, such as all your rankings, your positions, the keywords that you are ranking, and the traffic, of course.
So this created the foundation of what SEMrush would become. And it was pretty groundbreaking at the time.
That's right. There weren't a ton of players in the space at that time. And those marketers who were looking for increased search engine exposure, they were hungry for new tools and insights.
And this was right around the time when the SEO community was maturing. The popular blog Search Engine Land had just been recently founded. And Google was moving to become more opaque in how they rank content, leaving a lot of uncertainty for these marketers.
Yeah, marketers generally knew the foundations of what made up search engine's ranking algorithm. Backlinks, keyword density, length of content. But around this time, Google started changing its algorithm, causing major shifts within the marketing industry.
Here's Matt Cutts, Google's former head of search quality, from a 2010 video he made on the state of SEO.
The trend that I see in SEO continues to be this fork in the road where there's hacking and malware and legal stuff that's going on. And so SEOs have to ask themselves, do I want to go down this route where things are potentially illegal, where I could go to jail if I were to host malware or hack sites to do malware? Or do I want to go more towards the white hat path? And sometimes it feels like it takes longer, but you know, you don't want to get the overnight drive-by sort of wins that don't last very long. They don't stand the test of time. And if you take that path, you're more likely to be competing with people who are potentially doing illegal things like hacking sites. So I think that fork in the road will become more clear. We've already seen hacking continue to be more of an issue in 2009, and I think it will be even more so in 2010. So when we look at our stats about what people access in the webmaster documentation, My Site Got Hacked, for example, in the last little bit, has had a real spike in people looking at that article. So it's definitely a trend. It will definitely continue to be a trend where a lot more hacking and a lot more malware happens. But we'll keep tackling it. The best thing you can do is keep your server patched, make sure that you stay up to date, and hopefully, maybe by the end of 2010, we'll see the light at the end of the tunnel on that particular trend.
So Google was really pushing what's known as white hat SEO techniques, which followed their rules, and SEMrush helped marketers optimize.
But within the good graces of Google,
they had a lot of people using SEO Quake, and all the metrics there were public, so you can have all the information about links, about the keywords that you were ranking, but not detailed information. And with SEMrush, you could go to the second level of knowledge about what is happening around you and what is happening with your competitors. So that was the key moment.
So a couple of years after founding the company, they brought Fernando in on a sales role.
But there was an issue.
SEMrush, they had a lot of fans, but it was kind of difficult to promote something for selling if you were not doing any marketing. And the marketing that they were doing, it was in the very early stages. So they changed a little bit the focus, and I was starting creating the marketing department from the beginning, doing firstly, of course, content, then asking questions to users, trying to identify what were their pains so we can create more content. We were creating also the community in social media. I'm talking about 9 years ago, right? So being in social media, it was like, We are opening our Facebook channel. We are opening our Twitter channel. Oh, there's LinkedIn there. Oh, let's go and open a LinkedIn account. But we needed to start conversations. We needed to reply people's questions. And, you know, being a brand and being in a social media environment, you need to have a lot of people managing those accounts. Even for us at that moment, I believe we had around 100,000 users. Of course, they had a lot of questions. Most of them, they are just product related. So we needed to start our customer support team with one person, then two people, then three, and then all the marketing department.
So Fernando went to work building the foundation of their marketing team in order to help them move from self-serve to B2B sales.
And as part of that work, he needed to know who their ideal customer was. That and more after a quick break from our sponsors.
Before the break, Fernando had started building out the ideal customer for SEMrush.
They were thinking a white hat SEO freelancer who was focused on building organic backlinks.
But what they found was...
The first problem is SEO is big. You have different mindsets out there. You cannot recognize who is, at that time, who was black hat, who was white SEO, because the way that they were using SEMrush was really, really different. But at some point, we find out that the best way to identify our users' needs was just ask them directly. So we started going to different events. We started sponsoring different events all over the world.
Asking directly. What a concept.
I know, right?
So as they're traveling around the world to these different conferences, learning who their customer actually is, they have another aha moment.
At the beginning, our main focus was, of course, USA, UK, because our popularity was growing more there. But since we were more visible in other countries, we started doing things in Spanish, in French, in Portuguese, in Italian, in German. And the popularity of our services grew a lot in those countries. In some countries, when we were coming to different offline events, people were taking us as the Coca-Cola of SEO. So that they, if you want to do SEO, you need to use SEMrush. There is no other tool to do that. Of course, we had several competitors, for example, like Moz. We really love those guys because they were inspiring us, right? At some point, we were thinking, oh my God, these guys are so good. We hope someday we're going to be like them. But in other countries, they were they didn't know about who are who is Moz, how you need to use it, because they didn't translate their main interface. So it was easy as that. We translated our interface to different languages, and people from other countries, they could use all our features. So that was a really good point for us.
So internationalization was their competitive advantage. They were number two in the market behind Moz. But Moz didn't pursue an international strategy, so they became the default choice in these other markets around the world.
And then, of course, they needed to build teams to support these different geolocations.
Then we created our regional marketing teams. So we had people who were working directly for the Italian market, for the French market, for the Spanish market. And in those countries, SEO is really, really interesting because it's their own language, right? And they have their own rules, their own SERP features that they need to build, their own way to promote their services. So you need to approach to them as a local. We were trying to identify our ideal user, but we just needed to ask how you want us to improve our tools. And we integrated this service to SEMrush that is called User Voice. People just, it's open till now, till today. You can go there and ask us to create something that will help solve your problems. And people can vote there. If we get a lot of votes, one of our product owners will go there, will check that, see how probable is for him to take that feature, that new tool, and how long it's going to take to build it. And basically, we were growing the set of features that we have, because I just mentioned two of them, right? The keyword research and the domain research tools. Right now, we have more than 45 different features. So during the time, we grow a lot, not only in employees' number, but also in the number of features.
So they relied heavily on user voice, which allows users to upvote specific features, and then they went and implemented those features.
So how they helped grow into the company they are today? Right after the break.
So through the impact of internationalization and their focus on users' needs, they built an ever-growing company.
One of the interesting parts when we started acknowledging that we are growing fast was, okay, we had at least 20 different teams, and at that point it was easy to communicate with each other. 100 people in the company, you can talk to each other, you can understand what they're saying, you can be friends of them. In terms of autonomy for all those teams, it was easy to do the goals prioritization. In terms of democracy, okay, people, they're really involved with other teams' tasks. In terms of management, there is a natural transparency because everybody knows each other. But the problem started when we grow from 20 people to 20 teams to 19 teams. So in this case, we have 100 people, then you have more than 500 people. It's kind of very difficult to remember even the names of the people from other teams. Maybe people that are coming to the company, you're never gonna talk with them. We were opening offices in different countries. You know that those people exist, but you never communicate with them. So problems with communication started growing. Then with transparency, with a lot of people were working with similar tasks at the same time, which was really complicated. And of course, we needed to do something to change that, because when you identify that, okay, there are two teams that they are working with the same problem, something is happening. And those complications, well, they started to reflect demotivation in teams, no coordination in goals, the quality of the work that they were delivering, it was not that good to be published for public use. So all those problems, we accepted them, we acknowledged them, and we say, okay, we need to change something. And when we change everything, we start, okay, we need to figure it out, who is in charge of what? Second, what is the plan B in case of things may go wrong? And of course, what is the cost of this team? How much we will earn if we have more teams, and what are the deadlines for all the tasks? So all those questions are really good when you are growing, not from the beginning, not at the end of your business effort. If you are growing, you need to ask all those questions. How to coordinate, how we need to influence the goals of other teams in order to be more flexible with them, why we are taking this task. So all the questions, if you're asking questions inside of your organization, as we do in Semrush, is you're doing a good job, we believe.
And now they have teams all over the world.
Right now, we are about 1,000 people in customer support. We have around, I don't know, 100 people. In sales, we have around 100 people as well. In marketing, we have around 100 people. So we are kind of big now. Our main headquarter was in Philadelphia. We have most of the development in Russia and Cyprus, and right now in Prague. But right now, our headquarters, our C-level marketing department, sales department, is based in Boston and in Philadelphia as well. And some of them are in Dallas. So we have three offices in the US and other three offices abroad.
And with this larger team, they've adopted a new way of collaborating.
When we had more than 90 teams in 2019, so last year, we started using another workflow that is called Rhythm, that was implemented firstly by Spotify. They are the creators of this work strategy, and we call it, of course, Semrush Rhythm. We wanted to align all teams' efforts into the company beliefs. So we as a company, we have our own beliefs. Every company, every big brand, they have their own. We want to be the best company to make marketing software in the world. We want to build the best service for an e-commerce, for example. And all the teams are aligned by different North Stars that are set of goals that the C-level, that the business owners require from us. And every single team, they have their own bets. So they are creating these bets, putting their time, establish a timeline when they need to accomplish all their goals. And all the goals are aligned with the company belief. So it's kind of very easy and logical to do. But if you are escalating that to more than 100 teams and you have 1,000 people, it's more practical and transparent. Right now, most of the team, we asked to them, how good, how bad was the last change that we had? And you know what was the reaction of basically everyone? 69% of the people who, actually 70% of the people who are working in SEMrush, they say, okay, these changes are really good because I know what the rest of the teams are doing. Only 30% of them, they say, no, nothing has changed. Those people who said nothing has changed, they return to OKRs, still are doing a great job there, but the rest of the people are working with this different approach, which is kind of really good for a company that was growing that fast in that period of time.
Very interesting. And that actually brings us to the end of the SEM Rush story. Now, last week, Michael, you said we had a big announcement.
Yeah, well, it got pushed as these things sometimes do. So next week, fingers crossed, we'll be bringing a brand new story from a longtime friend of the pod on her latest launch. So stay tuned next Thursday. I promise we got a big one coming.
Thanks so much for listening to Rocketship.fm. Rocketship FM now has a premium ad-free feed. All you have to do is go to glow.fm/rocketship and subscribe. It helps support the show and it gives you an ad-free experience. You actually get an exclusive feed that you can listen to on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Yeah, and Rocketship FM is produced in partnership with Product Collective, which is a community for software product people. Product Collective is also the home of Industry, the Product Conference, Industry Virtual Workshops, and one of the largest Slack groups for product people anywhere.
And we're also on the Podglomerate Network, so a huge thanks to Podglomerate. You can listen to all the Podglomerate shows at thepodglomerate.com. We'll see you here next week on Rocketship.fm.